Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History, Project 2, Betty Liff, interviewing Mrs. Meyer S. Mintz, Ida Mintz. Can you tell me, Mrs. Mintz, the address of your home?
I'm in at 2715 Murray Avenue, also known as the Marfield Apartments.
Thank you. Mrs. Mintz, I'm going to ask you to tell us all about your family relationships, possibly where you were born, who your mother and father were, your brothers and sisters, your education, your childhood. Could you do that?
Let me start from the very beginning, because I think it's rather unusual that we all came during the First World War, prior to America's declaration of war. My parents came, and the five of us children, I was 13 at the time, and we all settled in Brownsville, New York. I can tell you that it was difficult adjustment because we were used to a fine lifestyle, and we had to settle for a meager lifestyle because we left everything behind, since the Germans, under whom we were at that time, would not permit any kind of, did not allow anything at all to be taken with us.
Did you come from Germany?
No, we came from Lithuania. I came from Vilna, which at that time was known as the Jerusalem of Europe. My father was a great Hebrew scholar. In fact, he had a license to be a rabbi, only he did not practice it. Now, as soon as we got to America, we all immediately started school. And, as I will tell you, all of us managed on very little to accomplish what we tried. My brother became a physician. My sisters became school teachers. I went on to law school and was admitted to the bar in New York, which was at that time an unusual for girls to become, although more and more were coming even then. And my brother became a physician. My sister Rachel is a Hebrew scholar, and she is involved in Hebrew education in Washington, D.C. for many years.
Could you tell me the rest of their names?
Yes, I gave you.
Yes,
We'll start out with Joseph, my brother Joseph, who is a physician. Now, I'm next in line. The one after me is Eva Solovay, S-O-L-O-V-A-Y, and she retired as a vice principal of the Midwood Elementary School in Brooklyn. And then my sister Rachel, who lives in Washington, is a Hebrew scholar, and she's retired from being the educational director for Temple Sinai in Washington, D.C. My sister Gertrude is the youngest, and she was an elementary school teacher who's also retired. So we're all getting there.
Now, did you live in Brownsville?
I lived in Brownsville until I got married in 1929. And I moved to Newark, New Jersey, because my husband there was involved there in the United Palestine Appeal, which was raising money for, at that time, Palestine only. And his domain was New Jersey. We stayed there until he came to Pittsburgh in 1941. I came to Pittsburgh with my daughter in 1943. When he became the regional director of the tri-state area, which involved Western Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, parts of Kentucky and parts of Maryland, and West Virginia. I think all of West Virginia.
Can we go back a little bit now, and would you tell me your name, your parents' name? You didn't.
My father's name was Moses.
Moses Brody.
Brody. Now, my own mother, who gave birth to me, died at my birth, but I had a very fine stepmother who devoted herself to us as though we were her own, and sacrificed a great deal more than I would ever do it for my own child, so that we could attain our ambitions.
I would like to ask you just how your family managed to educate you all. There must have been something.
I cannot tell you. All I know is that she borrowed from Paul to pay Peter one day, and she borrowed from Peter to pay Paul the next day. And we all managed. Of course, I worked during the day, and I went to school at night. But all the others went to school during the day, and not only to college, Hunter College. My brother went to Cornell, but the others went to Hunter College, and they even went to the seminary at night so that they could teach Hebrew.
Well, Hunter College was a city college.
City college, non-paying.
So that was a tremendous help.
Okay.
But it still sounds like a very remarkable story to me.
My brother had a four-year scholarship to Cornell. And the medical school, he had to really struggle.
And who was the big inspiration? Your stepmother?
A stepmother only. Mm-hmm.
That's a remarkable story, Mrs. Mims.
And she herself had no education, but she appreciated education.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's typical Jewish, too.
Yes.
Well, then when you, and where did you go to law school?
I went to Brooklyn Law School. I graduated, I don't remember the years anymore. At least I was admitted to the bar in 1926.
And did you practice?
Yes, I practiced for about a year or 2 years before I got married. And then when I moved to Newark, New Jersey, or got married in 1929, that was the height of the Depression, when lawyers were sweeping the streets. So there was no incentive for me to continue with the law at that time.
And you would have had to pass the bar there?
I would have had to pass the bar all over again. It was a different type of law. It was common law, and we were not, and New York is not entirely common law. So it would have meant going back to school and so forth and so on. So I became a housewife, and I was active in the community.
And then you never did go back to the law of practice?
No, I didn't.
I think the law of practice lost something.
I hope so. I don't know about that.
Well, then when you moved to New Jersey and your husband was in charge of the
United Palestine, United Palestine Appeal, there's a big difference because they did not become United Jewish Appeal until 1938, I believe, or 39.
So this was just raising money for Palestine only.
Just raising for Palestine. He had some of the very famous people who came there. As a matter of fact, in 1934, when, what's his name? Our greatest scientist.
Oh, Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein.
I want to ask you about him later.
Yeah. Well, I have pictures of him. Mm-hmm. When Albert Einstein came to Princeton in 1934, my husband, together with the governor of New Jersey, who at that time was Governor Moore, ran a tremendous dinner and concert in honor of Dr. Albert Einstein, and not only did we have Dr. Einstein there, but we had Gabriel Lovitch and Martinelli. Maybe you've heard
musicians,
and Madame Schumann-Heim came.
Yeah.
She and it was fantastic. In fact, I have a picture of Einstein that she gave to my husband when he was finished.
Who arranged this dinner? Your husband was
my
instrumental
husband
with the governor.
with the governor. Rabbi Abihail Silver was the principal speaker.
Well, I'm going to ask you to give me impressions of those people. Could you? All these people, especially Albert Einstein, of course.
Well, I personally didn't come in contact with him, but I do know that Mrs. Einstein, when my husband went to see him any number of times before the whole thing became, you know, finalized, she sent cookies for my daughter. She'd always inquired about it. We have lovely pictures of them.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
That's very special.
And, of course, that wound him up in the hospital with a perforating ulcer.
Your husband?
Yes, after all that.
I can imagine it was very high pressure. With
first
such
place, it was during the Depression.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about Martinelli and Gabrilowitsch? Did you meet them?
Yes, I met them. Well, they were wonderful. The one who really should be talked about is Madame Schumann-Hein, because I think at that time she was already 80 years old, but she was a great lady. You know, she was known for her singing, for her to come out on occasions like this was really.
I heard her at the New York Opera.
Yes.
Yes, so in Isolde.
Yeah. And that really was a something to wonder. Of course, Albert Einstein would have brought anybody out.
Yes, anybody would go with his medical.
But it was a difficult, very, very difficult thing because
you were very young then too.
Well, I was.
The two of you were very young
yes,
people.
Yes. Well, my husband was a little older than I, but it wound him up in the hospital, and after that he was, when he got through with that ulcer operation, he weighed 99 pounds, and we had to stay in my sister-in-law's home in Connecticut for 3 months before he could regain some of his weight.
It's a burden for young people. And then you went back to New Jersey?
Then we lived in New Jersey until 1941. And I lived in there until 1943. And that was during the war.
Yes.
So I took a job in a war factory as a bookkeeper.
Was this in New Jersey?
Newark.
In Newark.
Newark.
All right.
And I'll have to, it may sound as though I'm praising myself, but this man offered me a partnership that I should stay on. But I said, no, family comes first, and I moved to Pittsburgh.
And did that company grow very big?
No, I don't know. I didn't follow them up. But he tried very hard to keep me in Newark.
Well, how did you manage to work and raise a little girl?
Well, I had help. I mean, okay. I had somebody in the house.
I just wondered what they did.
I had a very devoted lady who came in. Of course, she was in school, too, don't forget. She was already, by the time we moved to Pittsburgh, she was 13.
Oh, I see.
So she was a bit, not big, but I mean, enough so that she didn't have to worry about anything special.
Was your husband brought to Pittsburgh? Sent for? Is that the way?
The United Jewish Appeal transferred him to Pittsburgh. And as a matter of fact, he was the only one whose family was moved to Pittsburgh because he said either you move me or I don't stay. So they decided to move us.
And that was in 1941 for him?
For him.
And you followed him 2 years later?
But it was just impossible, this back and forth business.
And that's when he organized the tri-state.
That's right.
And he is the organizer.
He is definitely
the
organizer.
He was the organizer.
And he sought, at first his big job was not only to organize the campaigns for money, but to make sure that the United Palestine Appeal got its fair share. Because the JDC, which is the Joint Distribution Committee, was competing for the same money. And it was a constant struggle for who was to get the larger amount or the right amount, shall I say. And that took a great deal of effort. Because there was a great deal of sentiment one way, and
well,
of course there was a sentiment the other way.
And not only that, a great need in both directions,
definitely,
too.
But
right.
The sentiment was
yes,
for
be a difference.
The German Jews.
Not interested in Israel, in
were
Palestine.
Not particularly interested in Palestine. Mm-hmm. They wanted the you know, help for the displaced people in New York, which of course was important enough, but not to the exclusion of Palestine.
Well, now that we're that far, I really would like to go back a few steps, because I would like to know a little bit more about your husband's beginnings and how he got so involved in the Palestine appeal. So if we can do that, because we didn't touch on that yet. Where he came from.
I always said that his first love was Israel, and the second love was his family. Ever since he was a child, he too studied for the rabbinate, but did not finish it up. I mean, he finished it, but he didn't take the examination for it. And when he came to Worcester, Massachusetts, that was where his uncle lived. And he lived in Worcester for a number of years, and he organized the Zionist Society in Worcester, Massachusetts.
This was not a junior society. This was the not a junior society.
No, it was a Zionist Society. And I even have the issues of the parties and things like that. That really was simply marvelous for a boy of 18 to do. They all followed him, and he lived in Worcester for a number of years. And from there, he went to Springfield, Massachusetts, where he taught Hebrew, and he did the same thing there. And then he came to New Britain, Connecticut, and he taught Hebrew there, and also was active in the Zionist organization.
Well, can you tell me what started him with this tremendous interest in Israel at such a young age?
Well,
was it his background, his parents?
Definitely.
I guess the persecution in Europe.
His education and his study of the Bible. And
I guess the history of the European Jews.
Of course, but by that time, Herzl, everyone knew about Herzl and followed Herzl and his ideals.
All right. Mrs. Mintz, can you tell me a little bit more about how your husband organized the Tri-State United Jewish Appeal after he came here to Pittsburgh?
Well, he was a master of organization, that's all I can tell you. And there were a lot of little towns and a lot of people to contact, but he had a definite talent for persuading people. He was a very persuasive speaker, really was. People just followed him because they felt his dedication and his earnestness. No matter what he told them, they never got angry at him. If he asked them for greater amounts of money, they didn't give it always, but they were not angry at him for that. I mean, they understood. And he set some terrific records here when he was known as Mr. Tri-State. But one time, he used to have two cash conferences a year. So one time, one cash conference was in March, and a great deal of money was raised that time. I don't remember how much. But very soon after that came the 1948 war, 1949, and Golda Meir, and he said to the national office, "You get me Golda Meir and I will raise you another $1 million. And that's exactly what happened. Even after the people had brought quite substantial sums of money from their communities, each and every one of them came out again with a great deal of money and raised another $1 million. And there's a letter from Golda Meir that he was one of the founders of the State of Israel, because that's the money they used to buy ammunition or whatever they needed to win the war. And that kind of miracle he performed any number of times. And he did twice a year. The communities just knew that they had to bring in cash. They used to borrow it from the bank and bring it in. Here's a picture of his last conference. The one right before he retired.
There must be hundreds of people in that picture.
There are. And one time he had the Mayor Briscoe of Dublin, and we couldn't accommodate everybody. It was impossible, and there were some bad feelings too, because You just couldn't accommodate everybody.
Mayor Briscoe is Jewish.
Yes, he is.
Do you have any impressions of some of these names that you're Goldemeyer,
no,
Briscoe?
No, it's marvelous. Every,
you met her personally?
Yes. In fact, we met her several times in Israel. Every time we came there, we managed to have an appointment with her, and she was always very gracious. She was the most gracious person. And Yigal Alon, he was at that time General Yigal Alon, he was wonderful. And all these people who came from Israel, every time we came to Israel, we would meet them.
You already knew them?
Oh, yes.
All of them. Well, now, there are some
and
other...
I'll tell you what, Governor Lawrence, Mayor Lawrence, and then Governor Lawrence, have played a big part in Meyer's ability to get people to do things, because he himself would travel to these some of the communities to raise money, Governor Lawrence. And sometimes that's done at his own expense with his own plane, with a small plane.
Obviously, your husband's influence on Governor Lawrence.
Oh, yes. He could influence anybody, except me.
Which is right. Woman's rights. Well, now, there are some other names in your husband's past that I think are worth asking about. Ben-Gurion.
Oh, yes.
Came
he
to Pittsburgh, at Charles Rosenblum's home.
Yes, right. That was in 1951.
Were you there?
Yes.
Could you tell us a little bit?
Well, I can tell you about Ben-Gurion when we visited him down in Staple Care. We visited him in his own home down in...
When was that?
That was in 1964. And I even have his letters, Ben-Gurion's mm-hmm. letter in Wichita. And it was very, very interesting. The strangest thing is that we had a driver with us who drove us down to Staple Care. But Mrs. Ben-Gurion would not permit him to come into the house. He had to stay outside. I don't know whether that was security or whatever it is. Anyway, he had to wait outside while we were inside, which we thought was a little bit bad, not so good. But she was very, very careful of him, and she watched him like a hawk. Mm-hmm. You couldn't do anything extra because she made sure that he was taken care of.
Well, do you think that in the background of most famous accomplished men is somebody caring very much?
Oh, she definitely was that kind. Mm-hmm. First of all, she was a nurse to start with.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And she just took marvelous care of him, and he really adored her. Person, but she served him well.
He looked like a little imp, did he? Is there something sort of devilish about his look? I mean, very sort of
Well,
just something very.
When he came, the place was full of great big books, and he was writing and he was studying. He was just immersed in books.
And as brilliant as
naturally.
Now I noticed another name too in your records is Menachem Begin, who came to Pittsburgh.
Yes. My husband was in 1968, I believe it was. My husband was honored by the Zionist district here, and Menachem Begin came, and he was the speaker, and we never saw him again. Oh, yes, we did. We went to Tel Aviv to his home before he became prime minister. At that time, he was in the minority, so we went to visit him in Tel Aviv, in his home in Tel Aviv.
Can you tell me something personal about him or any impressions?
Well, all I can remember is that he's a very... When I first saw Menachem Begin was when the question arose as to whether Israel should receive the German restitution and the German reparations. And he was against it. And I remember him speaking here in the Y. At that time, he was a real firebrand. And he was very much against that.
Do you know his reasons?
Well, he didn't want that dirty money.
Didn't want any fame.
He didn't want German dirty money. That was blood money, he calls it. But he eventually changed his mind, he was wrong, because the German money was built up in Israel. Built the railroads, built the factories, built everything, and the German refugees who came really
contributed a great deal to the growth of Israel, and everybody will tell you that. Not that they came by choice, but once they came, they were a very good influence.
Anything else about Menachem? That's a very good picture of the things that we don't know.
But he certainly has grown.
Yes.
He was one of, when I first saw him, he was one of those people who was running away. You know, there's a price on his head. You know?
Yes.
So
there.
Okay. The one I was most impressed with was Jabotinsky. We heard him here, and he was a great speaker. He was a very, very dedicated person. But it's too bad that people didn't listen. He was the one who told the Polish Jews to get out before Hitler came, and they didn't listen to him.
Was he a Polish Jew?
Yes.
What was his position in Israel?
Well, he wasn't very much of a persona grata in Israel because he was a revisionist.
Mm.
As a matter of fact, they didn't have his tomb until lately. They didn't bring his body into Israel until very lately.
Is there anybody else that you can think of that is...
Okay.
I think you must have had a long list of greats in your... Don't you feel as though that was a wonderful experience?
No, Weizmann, we met several times.
Oh, I wondered too.
Met several times.
Could you tell us a little bit about Chaim Weizmann?
Well, the joke will be that before we got married, there was a big dinner in New York at which Weizmann was the speaker. And Meyer, at that time, already knew him.
Mm-hmm.
So he invited me, that was before we got married, he invited me to that dinner. And at the end of the dinner, Weizmann came over to my husband, and my husband introduced me to him. He said to me, "You better marry this guy. I tell you, you better marry him." He was very... And then we saw him a couple of times in Israel, but he was already a sick man at that time.
Had Meyer even proposed to you?
Well, I don't remember. I don't remember. I guess so. Meyer was one of the very first to go to Palestine in 1928, when there was not a blade of grass and no roads. In order to go from Tel Aviv to Haifa, you had to go along the seashore on the sand, because there were no roads. And when he came to Jerusalem, he got very sick. There was a very prevalent illness from the bugs, I guess. And they called it porcatachi,
mm-hmm.
which
okay.
is something like, I don't know, something like what you use quinine for. What do you use?
Malaria.
Malaria. And Henrietta Zold herself came to his hotel to take care of him and to make sure that he had the right food and that he was getting the right care. But that's how close everybody felt at that time to anyone who was in Israel, or in Palestine, I should say. It wasn't Israel yet.
I guess there weren't that many in there, and certainly not very many Americans.
No, definitely
not. Was Henrietta Zold an American?
Sure, she came from Baltimore. She was a Baltimore.
Of course, Golda was a transplanted American. She
yes.
was an immigrant and lived in Milwaukee.
She was originally from Europe, too.
Yes.
Went to Milwaukee and then came to Israel, Palestine.
Well, then let's go back to the United Jewish Appeal again. And I'd like to know, at what time did United Jewish Fund take over here in Pittsburgh?
I really couldn't tell you that. See, Meyer was not involved in the United Jewish
at all.
Not at all. That was separate and apart from the Tri-State.
Well, had he retired by then? No.
No. The United Jewish Fund was probably set up in the late 30s or maybe early 40s. But the only concern that he had with the United Jewish Fund is to make sure that they allotted enough money for Israel. That was his job here. But his job was to raise the money in the area, in all the small towns. Some of them were very larger towns, but like Erie or Charleston, West Virginia, or Huntington, West Virginia, but had nothing to do with raising money in Pittsburgh proper.
Mm.